Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are rolling with Jason and John, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Still getting used to that new Roland song.
Yeah,
but it's easy to do. I'm trying to figure out where's best to come in.
Yeah, it's different.
But it definitely brings the kind of energy we need to start. That J. Cole, it was time. John, was absolutely time. It had run its course. And you're right, we have bailed on J. Cole in terms of as a show. That said, we got much more important matters to discuss, like the Lakers winning, but man, did it look like for a second, John, that Zion Williamson was about to lead the Pelicans to a comeback victory before injured with 3 minutes to go or around that. And afterwards, the Lakers go on to win, advance, and they'll face Denver in the playoffs. We know about that story and what the Lakers are up against, but man, what a mysterious thing for the Pelicans, who now got to figure out, you know, can Zion play, can he continue? What's the deal? He walked off. That injury was strange. We'll talk about the Lakers' win, but also the Pelicans' loss. Golden State is dead, at least for this season. They gone. Klay Thompson, that brother, he might be gone. Brad, go ahead and hit it. I don't think so, but he might be. That some of the speculation today, he's got to take a major pay cut, especially after you go 0-for-10. Now, he was telling Houston, y'all folks need to back up. He was telling Memphis a couple of years ago, 1, 2, 3, 4, we got championships. What a performance. What a terrible performance in the playoffs when they needed them. Golden State comes up short. Credit to the Sacramento Kings. They go on even shorthanded, obviously, and beat Golden State there. So we've got plan to talk about, and then we're 8 days out. John, I don't know if you care. From the NFL draft. We're also just...
Of course I care.
We'll see what y'all do. Don't know if you've got any ammo to make anything happen. Well, also, so we're getting closer to spring game for Memphis Tigers football. Saw some portal news. I'm not worried about it. Silverfield's got the right guys. Mm. Look who's saying it. I feel good about... We lost Jay Ducker, bro.
Right.
But it's okay.
Because they brought in Mario Anderson.
Exactly. Probably was time for Jay. He had kind of gone missing, hadn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't really him.
Got passed up last year, for sure.
He was not Victor Wembanyama.
By future NFL running back, you're not going to throw me off. Blake Watson.
That's right, he was.
Going to be a big week next week, maybe, for Blake Watson.
I kind of like the gratuitous kind of H you're throwing in there. Watson.
It's from Coming to America. Anybody who's seen it would recognize the reference.
I don't watch movies
that. That's how we do it, though. Some references you'll drop. They'll know, our listeners will, some I'll drop.
Yeah.
Our listeners will relate. That's from Coming to America, brother. Check out the movie. The first, the original.
No, I was going to say, like, not the original Netflix joint.
We tried with the remake.
It was all right.
Didn't come close to the original.
Yeah.
How are you gentlemen today?
Doing great, man. Doing great. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's Wednesday, April the 17th, and we are here.
Thanks for saying the date.
Yeah, a lot of people were out there wondering, what day is it?
It's usually what I do. I guess I did leave it for you today.
And so, hump day. I think, honestly, we have to call it what it is. The rhythm is going to be a lot harder to find with the new intro song. It just kind of goes right into it, and there's no, like, you know what I'm saying?
It's not tough. We'll find it naturally and organically,
yeah,
John.
Like,
I'm not as concerned as you. You're concerned about everything right now.
That's right.
And we know, first and foremost, Memphis Tigers basketball recruiting.
Yeah, I mean,
that is high on your priority list, and it's not looking good.
But
I heard some more of it this morning with you and
Jeff. Did you appreciate my analogy though? when it comes to, like, Paul Revere.
We're going to hit this later show. I have a little bit of push. I heard some more of it from you today.
Okay.
And I heard it from y'all's show yesterday.
Okay.
And I was telling you how fair your take is, but yeah. I was trying to be calm, too.
Yeah?
I got a bone to pick with you today.
Okay, you got a bone
about
to pick with me?
About your take.
Okay.
And how you were the... I was Paul Revere.
No, I was...
I was trying to tell y'all it was coming.
No.
And nobody was listening to me.
No, I'm saying the value.
It's not my problem. I'm talking about you keep bringing up that South Florida game.
Yes.
As if you were the only one that saw that disaster. It was really before that. I think your timeline is off. And even in it was really in those wins before then, because they blew a 20-point lead against South Florida. We all said that was a disaster. Right. It wasn't that point right there where we said, man, something's wrong with this thing. And you keep using that game. Yes. But it was earlier, actually.
Yeah, they messed around with
Austin
Peay.
So I'm trying to help you.
They messed around with Vandy. And we
gave up 57 in the second half to UTSA I was tweeting about saying, y'all are playing with fire.
Well,
where we started to say, and even Finney was saying, we're winning, but there are problems. You got to back it up a little bit in terms of where you're coming from on your argument.
That's exactly right.
When I say pushback, that's what I'm going at.
That's probably...
You keep using South Florida as the point there. It wasn't that game.
That
really.
Was just where it finally
caught up
to them.
It's just the first loss it caught. Yeah. Exactly.
But you're right. They were playing with fire.
1,000%. I literally went back to the tweets and saw. I literally used that phrase against UTSA when they gave up 57 in the second half.
No, the only reason why I used South Florida is because I wrote that they're back to square one, and I'm not going to say any names.
You wrote that game, and I could see using it as sort of a timestamp.
And I got a text from someone who said I was overreacting.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay.
So that's
I got you.
So
we were actually saying.
But no, you're right. We were yes.
There's issues, and so was Penny. When they were winning those first four in the AAC, but they were all, I mean, you were playing with fire was the phrase we used.
Yes.
Anyway, but you need to go back a little bit.
But I think that's why, like, I'm not always right, but when I do sort of try to project.
Well, you said that today with Jeff. You said I'm usually right.
Usually. I think I'm usually right.
We were so wrong, all wrong about the roster last year.
We swung and missed there. But they were 15-2, in fairness. They were 15-2, and they were number 10 in the country.
Yeah,
we are not responsible for anything.
Maybe something was wrong on the inside.
Yeah, I don't think it was us. I think we kind of pegged that one.
I mean, we thought the roster was great.
Yes.
We
were wrong on Jordan Brown. I was right on Mikey Williams. I mean,
you said Jordan Brown would be the leading scorer. So you were more wrong on him than anybody. But I just want to say, you're probably hitting, though, at a 60-70% clip.
I kind of heard
99 with Jeff this morning, and I just need to come in here. And again, be the calm voice that brings you back.
I'll take 60 or 70.
Are absolutely fair, but I want to help you in your argument.
I'll take 60 or 70.
I want to keep it calm. I don't know. You seem to be out ahead on David Jones is not coming back.
That's what I think they're...
Because, again, I think everybody calms down if we think he is. You don't seem calm. And you've said you're operating as if he's not.
Right.
Which I know you have to do if you're Memphis. You have to have a backup plan. But I want to wait. Because, again, doesn't the tone change if he's back?
100%.
He's going to have to turn down a lot of money.
The best gets are the ones you already have.
Well, particularly with him.
Yeah, because that's
not just scoring; it's rebounding too. I mean, that's a lot that he brings back to the table. Anyway, we'll see. I need to see him turn down the money first.
Right, right. I agree.
But I believe me, I respect what you're hearing.
Well, and I appreciate holding me accountable.
I have to. Somebody has to.
And I think 60-70.
Jeff's not doing it anymore.
No,
he lets you come on and say anything these days.
He let me get completely untracked.
My goodness,
no question about that. But don't you agree, though, like the value in Paul Revere was not, oh, look, they're here. Yeah. It was that they're coming.
Right. And that's what you were saying. You were telling us you started doing that at South Florida as they blew a 20-point lead. That's what I was hearing. And I was like, John, you got to back it up.
I meant more so about this recruiting class.
So we all said it was a damn disaster at that. We said, this is a disastrous loss. No, I got you.
I was trying to apply that more to...
I understand.
Where this sort of looks like it's headed.
Yeah, well,
you know,
okay.
The
okay.
AAC is coming, bro.
Bro, we got great AAC players, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
No, I saw people say if...
We got Colby, we got PJ.
Yeah, I saw people on Twitter say that if you're talking to somebody that thinks that this backcourt isn't good, they don't know basketball. I guess I just don't know basketball. I think I must just have completely.
Why do you hate PJ? Because he fell at ESPN. What is it? Cause you're using his ESPN ranking all of a sudden. We're not using the On3 ranking anymore.
Well,
you dropped him. You've gone with the lower ranking.
It's a big
Believe
drop.
Me, I'm watching you,
it's
bro.
A big
I'm
drop,
listening to you too.
Right?
Yes. He's 30 at ESPN.
33.
Okay, well, how many are in the transfer portal? That's still elite to me, especially based on what we saw.
Okay.
Like, that's real.
Okay, I mean, that would be one way to look
we
at
don't
it.
We have too much play-in story, but again, we had to hold you accountable. That's what I'm here for. Want to do that before you get out of here.
Well, this relates to the play-in because Memphis would be happy to be in the play-in game next year in the NCAA, for the NCAA tournament at this rate.
May stop.
That's true.
Let me tell you something.
Are you saying you would not be happy to be in the play-in right now? I would take that right now. I would say...
No, I want more. I want an AAC title, and hopefully that's enough to keep you out of the play-in.
Bro, we went from...
Come on, be the best team in the AAC. You're not in the play-in next year. Stop.
This is what
these end-of-day scenarios that you bring
this
up.
This is what we're doing, though. We went from going to the Sweet 16 in the second weekend, and now we're just trying to win the conference, right? Like, that's...
Everybody calm down.
That's how much the goalposts have moved. We have said, let's just assemble a team that can win the AAC.
Too painful.
Let's do
it. Painful.
Come on, man. It's like Memphis football and Memphis basketball have become the same entity.
Man,
too painful. It's
David
painful.
Jones going to have to do another interview, and maybe you'll calm down. Give us a sign, David.
We need like
because again, it makes all this moot.
Baptist.
Or a lot of this, it does if you got David Jones.
We need all the hospitals in Memphis to have a press conference like COVID. Say, David Jones, if we have all the resources for you, man, we'll take great care of you.
Don't ask us how we're paying them, but we can.
Yeah,
that's obvious.
We need Baptists. We need Methodists.
Penny wouldn't be saying 60 to 70.
St. Francis.
Again, I'd like to ask him what that percentage is today.
Yeah.
Remember, that was during the season.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, look, lively day.
Come on, man. I know you don't want to talk about Golden State, but you're going to have to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's, well, you know, do you not think the Pelicans and the Lakers deserve any of your time?
Oh, dude, we can go first on them. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was Zion Williamson's first playoff game, postseason game.
It's the first time in my life I felt sorry for him.
Wow.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
I've always thought, oh, man, just get in shape. Like, your career, take it more seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and I've even said, we said it when it came down to him and Ja, that you might be getting the better player in terms of longevity because, you know, can you trust this guy as big as he is on those knees? Like, we had our doubts, but I never felt sorry for him through it until last night. He is killing.
Yeah.
40 points in that game, tied it up 95-all, I think
it was.
By himself. And maybe it was because of what Shaq said at halftime. He's like, Zion's killing. He's got 20. But to impress me, you got to get 20 more in the second half, and you got to win. And Zion went out there and scored 20 more and had 40, man. And here was the thing: they were down,
right?
And it was a lineup that had Brandon Ingram on the sideline. It was Zion leading the thing with Alvarado out there, and all of a sudden Zion Williamson looks like the face of this team, and it was working. They had tied the game up, and all of a sudden this dude comes up, you know, lame, limping. But what was so strange is he's able to walk off and everything else, but he can't finish in a game. The Lakers took over after that. LeBron hit the layup. D'Angelo hit a three. You know, the AD got an offensive rebound. It was over. But Zion was leading them. And again, I don't know why it changed, but when you can't come back in that game and beat the Lakers in a game that you're killing, and you got Shaq about to say, man, I've got to give this guy credit. I mean, you're going to get 40. You're going to get 40 and the win. Man, to not be able to finish that game was terrible. And then, you know, they say soreness and everything else. There had to be something else because you saw it as soon as he came down. I don't know. I got the stress fracture maybe. Like something's going on there that he can feel. And, yeah, maybe you can walk off, but clearly knew he could not continue because he went straight back to the locker room. Do you feel what I'm saying on Zion?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he was proving something last night.
He was.
And he has kind of all season long, but nobody, you know, in terms of his durability – but nobody, you know, nobody cares until you can do something in the playoffs. Like, you don't prove, just like what Shaq said, you don't prove anything until, and this ain't the playoffs, but it's the point where you can win your way and you're the closest thing to it. And here's Zion on this, finally, this sort of stage, doing it. Might not have won the game, but he was bringing them back single-handedly pretty much, you know, with a bunch of role players. It was impressive.
It was.
And
it
not be able to finish that game was sad. I thought it was sad.
Yeah, because it was a crazy, crazy game in the sense that, I mean, the Lakers played Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum off the floor. I mean, that run was Jose Alvarado.
Nance was Nance, yep. Alvarado.
Yeah, Valanciunas was
off the floor. Herb Jones was out there.
Valanciunas Trey Murphy.
Had been played off the floor, just like you pointed out. He had been in that final game of the regular season when he only played 7 minutes.
Yep.
Like, they played Valanciunas right off. They were better with Nance out there. They were, and they had come back, John, to tie the damn game.
Yeah,
Lakers
absolutely.
Had it under control there pretty much third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think that if Zion finishes, they win the game. Who knows? I mean, they just tied it.
He was balling, man.
But it was I don't expect him to play on Friday.
11 rebounds, too.
A hamstring. It's going to be real dicey.
Dude, he was Charles Barkley out there.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley-esque in just in terms of this bolt. You could not – I'm telling you, did y'all see LeBron grow gray hairs on his face trying to deal with it? I got to give LeBron credit. He's out there taking charges and everything else. But LeBron, did you see him? He had gray hair growing out the sides of his head. It just felt like that's the Lakers trying to deal with what Zion was. It was pretty much a one-man show. And he could not finish.
Yep.
You don't think he goes? Yeah, I think it's deeper than just some leg soreness, like Willie Green was talking about afterwards.
Yeah, no.
When you can't finish a game like that off a performance like that?
A tie game.
I feel sorry for Zion and Pelicans fans who then have to watch Anthony Davis sort of finish it off for him at the free throw line. Their former guy who got up out of their small market team, went to big market. Like, that's a sad story as well. But, told you what the Lakers were going to do. I was telling Chris, man, I've never been more sure about something, the Lakers winning that game, because the 3 days rest, game one against Denver Saturday, they needed it. Lakers had control. I guess that's about third quarter, and all of a sudden Zion's bringing the Pelicans back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how the NBA is. I mean, everybody's got to run, especially at home. Pelicans are right. The crazy thing was they were doing it basically without C.J. McCollum, without Brandon Ingram. Zion Williamson was bringing back. Alvarado was playing like a stud, a backup.
Right.
I don't usually have any interest whatsoever in the Pelicans because they look to me like they're dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Brandon Ingram and Zion. But I thought last night, man, that was a heck of an individual effort. You know, and then a great effort by some role guys and had you in there. But too much LeBron at the end, and then Zion can't finish. It's tough.
Yeah, news breaking literally a minute ago. The NBA has leveled this is according to Adrian Wojnarowski, a lifetime ban on Jontae Porter.
Knew that was coming because you can.
It'd
been
gambling.
It'd been interesting what they would have done if it had been a star. That's a different story, though.
Yeah.
Jontae's somebody you can do it to.
I'm curious what they found. I mean, because there was reports yesterday of him having a FanDuel account in Colorado from 2021 to 2023. He was a VIP, but he'd never been on basketball, right? He never wagered on basketball. So in and of itself, that's not a problem. But I just wonder, like, did he get himself into a situation where – you know, he felt like, oh, I could benefit financially if I basically, you know, don't play well, right? Is that what they found?
It appears so.
We don't know exactly. That's the way it feels. Look, yeah, the NBA is they have no other option. They have to come down with an absolutely iron fist here. Because they're battling that. They battle that with Tim Donaghy. They battle that just sort of in the day-to-day of players not taking it seriously or Boban missing the free throws. You know what I'm saying? They can't play around with the punishment on a guy. You know what I mean?
Well, I suppose not when you're in partnership with these sports books.
Yes.
What are we talking about? That's money right there. You're messing with their money, you know, when you're in messing, as you say, with perception when you allow this to happen. So you got to come down again. Is it a different story if it's some better young player in the league that's not on the fringes like Jontae Porter? Like, what, you know, I don't want to name names, but let's just pick some young star, some guy that's coming up, you know, on a team that's playing a lot more, 30, 35 minutes, and is silver as heavy-handed on that young player that you wouldn't want to lose to a foreign league as he would be on. See, this Jontae's presented them with an opportunity here really to use him as an example. You know, we're going to and kind of maybe your bark's going to be louder than your bite, because again, what happens if it's if it was Jalen Green, you know what I'm saying? If it was somebody that actually you got a lot of, you know, hope for in the league. I just wonder if he'd been as heavy. I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know.
He could have figured out some way to circumvent.
I think you're right.
And go around and be lighter.
I think you're right, but I don't really know.
But yeah, you're right. You had to. You had to drop the hammer.
And then finally, in terms of the play-in last night, the Sacramento Kings are the team that does it. They are the team that shuts the door, regardless to me of what Steve Kerr and all those guys say. I mean, because the financials are what the financials are. I mean, somebody's going to have to either move on or take a substantial pay cut.
The Golden State's got all the leverage. They own, you know, Chris Paul, they can just wipe him off the books. It's non-guaranteed. With Clay is a free agent, as you point out, but you've got to demand he take a pay cut.
Absolutely.
Steph and all those guys, they want him back. You know, Kerr signed up.
118-94, it was 54-50 at half. At halftime, Steph had 5 points. They had no offensive rebounds. He had 9 turnovers, whatever it was, and they were only down 4. So you go into the half thinking, oh, this is where the barrage starts, right? This is they've stayed close in this game, and this is where they're going to flip it. And credit to the Kings, credit to Keegan Murray, that young man, what a step he has taken from his first year to his second. I mean, he was the MVP of the game last night. I mean, he made every big three.
32.
Harrison Barnes made big shots. He was cooking Clay there at the end, which is kind of poetic, former teammates. You know, De'Aaron Fox kind of doing what he does, right, just sort of leading everything and making those floaters. And then I thought Keon Ellis made some back-breaking threes too. You know, the young man at Alabama. I'd say an embarrassing end for sure to the Golden State Warriors dynasty, because this Kings team to me is just not very good.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, they seem to match up well with the Warriors. I don't know if it's Mike Brown, like, kind of knowing as a former assistant sort of the inner workings or what. But Trayce Jackson-Davis got played off the floor pretty early, and then you ended up – it was like basically like last year where it was a dogfight, went 7 games with Looney there at the 5. And Steph's heroics just were not enough. 0 points from Clay. It was, you know, it felt like, honestly, Jason, it felt like Brady's last game against the Cowboys when he was throwing that thing 60 times into the dirt.
Mm.
that's what I was thinking of.
You hate to see it happen to somebody so nice, too, right?
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah, he's not. No, he's a terrible human being.
Boy, he had it coming, probably. Just sort of what you'd put out there in the air. Again, I mean, Klay Thompson's as snobby as it gets in the NBA. So it's sort of coming back around. You figure that you never hate to see that. 0-3 for Golden State in the play-in. Shouldn't have been there.
Right.
And we can point at Klay Thompson and say you came up short. But frankly, you need to be pointing the finger back at Draymond Green, whose suspensions this year cost them a chance to be out of the play-in. A chance to finish higher than 7th. I think there were 10 and 11s under 500 without Draymond this year. Significant portion of the season, they were much better, obviously, with him in the lineup. Everybody's pointing at Clay and say, yeah, you got to take a pay cut if you're coming back, and you cost us last night, and then, you know, Steph had no help. It's really Draymond and his antics you need to be going back to. The issue is with them, they're hooked in with him, you know. It's Clay that's – it's Draymond you've got now on a contract that who's going to take him? So – That's he's the one who really cost them. They never should have been the play-in. Steph's playing at too high a level. If he'd been there all season long, they'd have been 6 or higher. You can blame Clay all you want to, but in the end, this season comes down to Draymond Green's antics, the suspensions, and how bad they were without him. Clay and Steph been telling you all year how important he is. He cost them. They shouldn't have been in that spot. 0-3 all time in the play-in.
Yep.
You know, they're not, including a loss to the Grizzlies. They are not a play-in team and never should. There was no margin for error as old as they are. And again, those young pups, they're coming, but they're not ready. And you put yourself in that spot, in the 10 spot, boom. You know, all it takes is a hot night from Sacramento.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So that was. Again, you got to make decisions. You got to see what's going on with Clay and what he's willing to take and all that. But it definitely felt like the end. More details, by the way, emerging on Jontay Porter. So what happened, it sounds like, is, and I think maybe we maybe knew this, I don't know, but it's confirmed. The league's investigation found that prior to that March 20th game for the Raptors, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an individual that he knew to be an NBA better. Another individual with whom Porter associated and knew to be an NBA better subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay prop with an online sports book, don't know who it is, which won $1.1 million.
Yeah, they were stupid. Remember the story initially said Jontay Porter was the biggest prop bet that night. Like the how much they bet raised
their biggest
all
liability.
Kind of,
absolutely.
Exactly. The fact that it was him
absolutely.
Told you everything right there. It was stupid.
No question.
Especially to place that big a wager. Spread them out or something. I don't know if you're trying to get over. This already seems like this is child. This was foolish.
It was really stupid.
Because it's easy. You set off red flags. Everybody said it. I think it was on DraftKings and somebody else that he was the – the highest bet on parlay guy all of a sudden at one night. And
nobody's putting $80,000 on an end of bench guy.
Ever.
Unless you know.
Stupidity.
Unless you know. I would imagine most people don't put $80,000 parlays on NBA prop bets, period, right? Like, I bet you're not getting a ton of that. And so then you see it come across and you're like, well, first of all, I can't believe they even accepted an $80,000 prop bet on Jontay Porter. That seems crazy to me. But you see it come across like, whoa, under? Like, that's
odd. Yeah, they shouldn't have took the bet.
That's odd. And so now, you know, look, he was a fringe NBA guy. It's not like he had like some career he was actually protecting. I'm assuming that he got, what, half of that would be my guess.
Perhaps.
You know,
it's really, again, a golden opportunity for the league to come look like it's going to come down heavy-handed on anybody who messes with this stuff, and it can send a message that way, more from an optics standpoint. Again, what would you do if it was a guy of a higher profile, you know? Would you be willing to suspend him, to ban him, and come down this hard? That'll be your issue if they don't pay attention, you know, to you, if they don't believe you, if they just think, okay, they'll do that to Jontay Porter, but they won't do it to me. I would think this sends a stern enough message that, you know, the big boys ain't going to play with this stuff. The older guys ain't doing it, okay? It's going to be the younger guys.
Who are barely in the league.
Exactly. That are deciding whether or not I want to take this risk.
Yes.
Right? It's not going to be your older Stephs and LeBrons. The folks didn't come up with it. They're not thinking of it. It's these young guys who think they can get over.
Yes.
Right? Stupidly.
That's egregious.
And frankly, like I said, it's probably an opportune thing for the NBA that it can happen to a fringe guy like this early. They can send this message, and it looked like, you know, it's going to come down hard on the future people who try it.
Exactly. Anyway, that's the latest. We'll talk to Mark Giannotto about.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Memphis. Mark Giannotto is the sports columnist for the Commercial Appeal, host of Giannotto and Jeffrey from 2 to 4 here on 92.9. Joins every Wednesday, and he joins us now. Mark, we just got the news, by the way, that Jontay Porter, I don't know if you've had any dealings with him, but he has been banned for life for gambling on the NBA, among other things. So there was an $80,000 prop bet parlay involving his unders that drew attention, and then he actually was betting on the NBA. That's the other piece that's getting less headlines. He was betting on the NBA through a friend's account while he was with the Raptors G League affiliate. So you can't do that, and he has been banned for life. What do you just make of this? Do you think we'll see more of it in the NBA? And who on the Grizzlies do you think is most likely to get banned for life for gambling?
Yeah, well, it does strike me as there's no way he's the only one. There's just no way. To think he's just some rogue guy who's doing this, I don't know if, like, star players are doing this, but, like, there's what? With two ways, there's 18 times 30. There's, like, whatever, 500 guys in the NBA, 400 guys in the NBA. Like, to tell me he's the only one, I'd be shocked. I mean, it's the danger of, you know, these leagues cozying up to the gambling outfits like they have. And, you know, I still think the, you know, it's worth it in the sense that, like, you know, these gambling companies spend a lot of money advertising. They spend a lot of money at our station advertising. Like, I understand why you do it, but there's also inherent risks to doing it. And this is one of them, where that the integrity of the game can be compromised. And it's very clear. Now, it feels like reading the details of this, Jontay Porter was pretty brazen, ultimately. And that's why he got caught. But my gut reaction was, there's no way he's the only one doing this. And so it's something that they are going to have to monitor. It's probably right that they gave him a lifetime ban. But, like, my question is, like, what would the NBA have done if it was Michael Porter Jr., his brother, doing this, as opposed to him? You know, like, would they have done this to a true impact player, not a two-way guy? I don't know the answer to that. And now it does seem like maybe this the reason for the lifetime ban is to set a precedent, but it's something not just the NBA, all these leagues have to monitor now that these, you know, we've seen the one side of it where the players are sort of complaining, and probably rightfully so, about these fans who are getting super aggressive when they lose a bet and kind of ridiculing them because they lost a bet. There's that side of it that's dangerous. And then there's this other side of it where, you know, now that these prop bets are so prominent, so easy to gamble on stuff, there's risk for the league, the integrity of the league. It seems like this was handled appropriately. At the same time, I just think it'd be naive to think, like, oh, they handled this, this is a one-time thing. Like, I think we're going to see this consistently now that gambling is so prevalent in sports. So kind of, you know, not to say gambling wasn't prevalent before, but it was almost like paying players in college. It was all done, like, under the table. Now it's all just out there. And so we'll see, you know, moving forward, if there's anything else like this. But it seems like, you know, whether it was the college, remember the college baseball controversy last year where the coach was like, really, like, going to, he was like caught on camera putting bets. I forget what team it was. It was like a big, maybe Cincinnati baseball or something like that. But, like, it seems like the people who get caught right now are just the ones who are completely brazen about it. Right. And that's reading the details of the Jontay Porter thing. It seems like he was pretty brazen, you know, betting on games himself, essentially, you know, putting a lot of money on an obscure prop involving him. Like, it's like, you know, stuff that seems like it's easy to flag. But my gut tells me there's other people who are smarter about it who are doing it as well. And they're never going to catch those people.
By the way, and you know, those bets that he put in while he was with the Raptors G League affiliate, he did bet on the Raptors to lose in those in those bets. So he's sharp. He's very sharp.
Well, and remember, he played for the Grizzlies for a minute. Yes. He was under contract for the Grizzlies for a minute. I don't remember ever talking to him. I think it was during, like, COVID, so, like, you know, we weren't really in the locker room or anything then.
Yeah, John, act like you had a relationship with him, I thought, there for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I don't recall ever speaking to him. Like, you know, I don't recall ever speaking to him, but I do remember him being on the Grizzlies for a minute.
Yeah, like, here's the truth. When you press submit on an $80,000 prop bet parlay involving a 12th man or a 15th man on the end of the bench, you might as well post on Twitter, Jontay Porter is throwing the game!
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm dead-ass serious, because that's just...
Well, you're basically saying, flag this. Please flag this. You know, like, one of these, you know, like, yeah, no, exactly. It seems like he was pretty brazen about it. But what it tells me, though, is that there's probably people who are being much smarter about it and subtle about it, and they're going to be able to get away with it.
Yeah, just so everybody is clear, you're driving. I got a text from somebody that's driving now. They thought they had a flat tire. But it's just
that you're Mark's driving through the wind.
You, in fact, have a flat tire, Mark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just want to make sure.
Hold on, let me switch off the Bluetooth. Hold on.
No, I don't want you to actually get into an accident or anything. I just wanted to make sure that you did not, in fact, have a flat tire. These Memphis roads are relentless.
Rex, what new No. I'm good to go. Here, I switched off the Bluetooth. That should be good.
That's good. Yeah.
Mark, which of these NBA play-in storylines did you find yourself more drawn into last night? Was the Pelicans and their push and losing Zion, the Lakers pushing on, and they're going to play Denver, or was it sort of this end of Golden State narrative, or at least end of it for this year, Sacramento Kings move on? Which one were you more pulled into, more interested in?
Well, obviously the first game was much better, and it was, you know, the drama of Zion scoring his 40th point and then leaving the floor. Like, I just thought that whole game, I put it on Twitter, encapsulated why I don't take the Pelicans seriously. CJ McCollum, their highest paid player, looked old, like, you know, just didn't look like he had it anymore. Their second highest player is Zion, who can't stay healthy. And their third highest paid player is Brandon Ingram, who was benched down the stretch. And their fourth highest paid player was Jonas Valanciunas, who also didn't play down the stretch. So that was interesting. But I think it's got to be, it's the, even though the game wasn't that good, it's the future of the Golden State Warriors, and just the surveying kind of ultimately, like, they won that title 2 years ago, but other than that, the last 5 or 6 years, they haven't, you know, you really strikes you that they really didn't accomplish that much once Kevin Durant left. And then I was stunned. I'm going to be honest, stunned. I didn't think I was going to hear Steve Kerr bury Klay Thompson. But to hear him say we need him back, I was kind of stunned by that, because to me, watching how this season played out, watching how that game played out, I don't see how you come away with any other thought than, like, maybe if we retool, maybe we can get it, you know, have one more go at it with Steph. But even Steph, I thought Steph in that game looked tired, you know, like, looked like a guy who has been relied upon too much.
Yeah.
And dare I say, like, I think his days of being the number one player on a championship team are over. You know, ultimately, if he's going to win another title, I don't think he's going to be the lead dog on the team. I think he can still be the number two. Like, he's still a fantastic player, and still seems like he has a few more years. But, like, he's not a guy who's equipped, I think, at his age to carry a team through a whole season in a postseason. Like, ultimately, when you watched him play that, like, he looked tired in that game. And it was like a, you know, especially in the second half. And so I'm just more interested in sort of what, like, to me, if I'm the Warriors, I'm not trying to, like, maybe you're forced to try, you know, get based on what they accomplished, squeeze everything you can out of this. But it now feels like they're kind of entering, and obviously they accomplished more than the core four did here. But doesn't it feel like to me they're entering that stage that kind of the Grizzlies were in the last year, the core four, and then when they were trying to make it work with just Mark and Mike, and it just, you know, it never did. You know, like, ultimately, like, it never did. And, like, it feels to me like, if they don't break it up, which it sounds like they might not, they're literally destined to repeat exactly kind of what we felt here at the end of the Core Four era.
Knowing what you know now, would you prefer to have that Golden State pick still? Or are you fine enough with saying, you know what, you know, we'll see what happens with Marcus Smart? With what's happened to Golden State and the fact that, I think that Portland now has that pick with Boston having shipped that one out. But would you like to have the pick back at this point? Knowing what you do now, and again, you do, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. You've had Vince Williams Jr. emerge. Who knows how good G.G. Jackson could be. Would you want the pick back? If I could give it to you today, you could wave a magic wand.
Today, I would say no. After the draft lottery, if we find out it's like a top three pick, maybe. But here's what I would say. You can still, if, like, the Marcus Smart thing doesn't work exactly as planned, like, we saw at this trade deadline, people want it. Like, you can still spin him off for something else. So I think I'm fine with the trade still today. Even as disastrous as it went this year, where he barely, ultimately barely played.
I think I agree.
Played.
Yeah, for now.
I think for now, I'm still okay with it. Because ultimately, they weren't gonna be adding two rookies to this team next year anyways.
No, but could it help you move up? You know what I'm saying? When you got two first rounds, a little bit different. Yeah.
No, and you could have traded for – I mean, ultimately, you took your swing at Marcus Smart.
It's true.
Because in this scenario, you don't have Marcus Smart, and it means you're probably going into this offseason going, man, we need to pick up another veteran. And so you're using that pick – you're probably –
dangling that pick out anyways, even if you have it now, to try and go get some, you know, some major piece. I mean, the reality is, especially in this draft, where there's not very many guys you can go, that guy's definitely going to be playoff ready as a rookie, you know, like, and where this team's at, you know, I think I'd rather have Marcus Smart at this point. And especially because, let's say next year it doesn't go exactly as planned, I still think next summer you can trade him and get something decent for him. You can maybe get a late, you know, maybe not a lottery pick, but you can get a first round pick for him if you trade him, maybe.
Interesting. Derrick Rose, my heart really would love to see him just on the bench for a winning Grizzlies team. I mean, I'd like
I think a good chance of that.
I want to see him play. Jason says he doesn't want to see him play.
Playing.
Do you expect? It sounds like they really do value him. Do you get that sense that like, hey, and we got a lot of moves to make, but we value what D Rose is and what he can do for Ja.
I think he's going to be next year's team. I think he's going to be Udonis Haslem for next year's team. That's what I think.
Love it.
I think he's going to be on the roster. I don't know if they're going to even expect him to, like, I mean, maybe he'll be a backup point guard of some kind. You know, like, I do think when he played this year, he was not bad. You know, like, he was effective enough. The problem, of course, was it felt like he couldn't play more than two or three games at a time. Before having to bow out to injury, but it does sound like they value his voice in that locker room. Ja called him a big brother the other day, and so I suspect he'll be back as the 15th man on the roster. I mean, ultimately, you're going to have to eat the money anyways, so might as well take it. You know, you signed him to a 2-year deal, might as well take advantage of him if you're going to. You know, like ultimately, you're not going to. It's going to hurt your cap no matter what. And, I mean, I could see a scenario where, like, they might be in a roster pinch. But I think, like, honestly, I'd much rather get rid of Zaire Williams than get rid of Derrick Rose if what they're saying is right, that, like, Ja values him, the organization values him. Like, just being that veteran voice seems to me to have more value than some of these, like, superfluous wings. And so... And again, you're going to have to eat the money if you release him anyways. So I suspect he'll be like, you know, what DeAndre Jordan is for the Nuggets right now, what Udonis Haslem was for Miami for a bunch of years there at the end. I think that's what he'll be next year for the Grizzlies. Won't play, won't really play very much, but will be there as a voice, as a veteran voice, a steadying voice for this team as they try to, you know, take another step forward, or take a step forward after kind of being, it feels like we for so long said this team's ahead of schedule. And now it's like almost after this year, you're like, man, they need to make up for some lost time here because they essentially lost this whole year. And so I'm not passionate one way or the other. Like, I won't be devastated or scream and yell if they release him or trade him or whatever. And I also don't think I'm going to be upset. Like, I'm not going to go, oh, they're wasting a roster spot on Derrick Rose. What are they doing? Like, I'm kind of in the middle.
We don't do that.
Yeah. Ooh.
If you do that.
His son's at school at Lausanne. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a guaranteed contract, isn't it? This was a 2-year deal. When he came, this was understood.
So if you don't get to do that, okay?
Now, I must say, are we all at a point where most of us think that Luke Kennard has played his last game as a Grizzly?
My personal feel, I don't know because ultimately they can't. Here's what I'd say. I do not think he is going to be on this roster at a $14.8 million cap hit. Let's put it that way. Like, they're not just going to.
If they rework the deal, will he be back, is what you're saying.
That would be the only scenario that makes sense to me. I don't think you can pay for you can given their salary cap constraints now with three guys on big deals. I don't think it is smart to pay $14.8 million for a guy who may or may not be in your playoff rotation. Because that's the truth. All these people who talk about his 3-point percentage, the reality is every time Luke Kennard has been in the playoffs, except for I guess the Lakers series the Grizzlies were in last year, he has been played off the court. Like, that is just the truth.
Yep.
And so
it is.
I don't think you can pay $14.8 million for someone you don't know for sure is going to be in your playoff rotation. And personally, I think you can get, like, my gut tells me this draft pick they have, you're going to be able to get a decent, maybe not everything Luke Kennard could give you, but a decent amount of what Luke Kennard can give you with this draft pick, especially if Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson are good again, you know, are good. So my personal feeling is I would just let him go. I want to spend the money on a big. I don't want, because like ultimately they're going to have to decide if they keep Luke Kennard, they lose their mid-level exception because they will be over that threshold. And I would just they need a quality big. I would rather see them spend that money, whatever, $12 million, $13 million, whatever it is, whatever it ends up being. I'd much rather see them spend that on a starting big and then use the first round draft pick to maybe try to replace some of Luke's shooting. That's how I would approach it personally. And if you can trade him, that'd be great. But my gut tells me no one in the league is going to want Luke Kennard at $14.8 million next year.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's a good deal. If I had to vote, if I was Zach Kleiman, yes, Luke Kennard has played his last game for the Memphis Grizzlies. I wouldn't even really want to renegotiate the deal personally. Now, others are higher on him. I think the front office is higher on Luke Kennard than I am. But I also, like I said, I would be stunned if he's back on that team option. If he's back, it's going to be on, you know, a three-year deal with less annual salary or a two-year deal with less annual salary. A little more secure, kind of like maybe something similar, something like the Tyus Jones deal, but instead of 2 for 30, it's 2 for 20, you know, something like that. That's the scenario I see Luke Kennard back with the Grizzlies. But again, my personal belief is that I would move on and I would spend that money on a big.
Yeah. We are talking to Mark Giannotto, joins us every single Wednesday here on the show. Read him at commercialappeal.com and listen to him from 2 until 4 here on the station. All right, how do we feel about what Memphis is doing in the recruiting trail? Obviously, a lot more work to still be done, but have gotten off to a start of P.J. Haggerty, Colby Rogers, Dane Danger. We'll see how many will join in short order. I believe the latest is that Memphis has reached out to, and maybe their visit is expected to happen, from Mark Freeman from Morehead State. What do you make of the names and the players that Memphis has been involved with?
I think it's been fine so far. I mean, I think it seems to me, you know, Haggerty, Danger, and Rogers are all guys who will be impact players for him this year. I mean, I've kind of couched it with, you know, to me, if PJ Haggerty is your best player, you know, I suspect Penny will surround him with a better supporting cast than Tulsa did, but ultimately, that's probably not going to be good enough, honestly. I think you need someone, you know, like, to me, all of this makes a ton of sense if you have a lead dog attached to this team. And I don't see even Haggerty at this point in his career as the lead dog of, like, a tournament team. And so to me, that means either David Jones is coming back or there's someone else who they grab, you know, particularly once that NBA draft deadline comes and goes, who can really kind of team up at least with PJ Haggerty. But in that sense, if that's like, it all makes sense otherwise, all the names, we spent all year, or at least not all year, we spent the last month or two of the season complaining about how Penny didn't have guys who were willing to accept roles. It was all these just dudes who were leading scorers and, you know, that's all they wanted to do. And if they weren't doing it, they weren't happy. They weren't playing defense. And, you know, it looks like he is being more intentional about recruiting guys who can fill specific roles, guys who will be more easily, you know, able to buy in to what he's selling. So I would say I'm encouraged, honestly, by what he's done here early. It seems like he's off to a good start. And the reality is, given David Jones's situation, given the way the rules are now for the NBA draft, this was never going to be, like, they're not going to get this settled till June. The key to me is getting it settled in June, not having stuff lingering into August, into September, into October, into December, like it did this year. Unfortunately, you wish you could get everyone in place over the next, you know, few weeks. But with the NBA draft process, I mean, some of the, like a guy like David Jones, even though he's not going to get drafted, he'd be crazy not to go through the draft process the way the rules are set up now. Like, he's not going to probably get invited to the NBA draft combine, but he's probably going to get invited to the G League combine. And, like, he should absolutely participate in that if he has dreams of playing professionally. And so, but it also means you're going to have to wait a little bit. And so, but it feels like they're off to a good start. If they pull in, you know, a couple more of these guys who they're looking at, you know, if you have five, you have seven guys in place by the end of the month, because if you, you know, you consider they've got the three transfers who've committed already. Let's say they get two more transfers over the next week or two, and then you've got Nick Jourdain and Jared Harris. That's seven guys. That's more than they had in place last year at this time. You know, I think they're off to a good start, feels like to me. That's the best way I would phrase it. They got more work to do. They still got to secure, kind of to me, again, that lead dog, or at least someone who can you can really pair as a 1A, 1B with P.J. Haggerty. But it seems like the roles beneath that, it seems like they're being very, you know, there's very specific targets and very specific skill sets that they're going after. And that's kind of what we, you know, that's kind of what everyone hoped they would do. You know, and it wouldn't just be going after the best available player based on transfer rankings and star rankings. Like, we saw that last year when you got the best of that was available to you, and it didn't mesh well. And so, like I said, I'm encouraged. I think it's a good start.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said. I would just say, like, you don't. It just because a player is less, and I'm not saying you're saying this, but I sort of see this like from Kentucky fans or a little bit, for example, right? Like, just because a player is worse or lower rated, it does not necessarily mean he is going to be a better fit. It may just mean he's just a worse player. Like, it's not like you have to compromise one or the other. I think Memphis just has to find, you know, both. They need to find the right combination of both. And again, we'll see. I mean, I just don't. Go ahead.
I think it's also a lot like traditional recruiting used to be. Like, you can pay attention to the star rating and whatever all you want, but really the telltale of it is who else was recruiting this kid. You know, like Colby Rogers, for instance. Like, he was getting recruited by Alabama, some other. You know, P.J. Haggerty was getting recruited by Power Conference schools. You know, that's how that to me. You know, I didn't pay attention to Dane Danger's list. I don't know what his looked like, especially since it happened so quickly. But to me, that's what you should be paying attention to, not these websites who list out, you know, your transfer class is rated this highly or this is my top 50 transfers. To me, it's what does his offer list look like? It's just like in traditional recruiting. If his offer list looks like it, you know, like that to me, you know, the coaches ultimately know. You know, especially with transfers, there's enough film on all these guys. And so that's what I really pay attention to is who else was recruiting this kid.
Right.
Mark, last thing. What in the Sam Hill are the Commanders doing, y'all having four quarterbacks in on the same day for a visit? Is this true what I'm reading? Is this like dating game where y'all just go through?
Well, they had 30 prospects in on the same day. Which is bizarre. I think these
quarterbacks really should have more pride about themselves and say, no, if I'm coming in, a guy like I want a day. You know what I'm saying? The fact that they're coming in all together, the four of those guys, just said that I'm hearing this like to have all four of them in there is like unprecedented. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, they are now, Jason. They're taking them all to Topgolf. Maybe that was enticing. Apparently, all 30
you gonna
of
figure
the
it out there, Drake May or Jaden Daniels at Topgolf? What in the heck is going on? I thought we were under new leadership, Mark, new ownership.
I know. Hey, listen. As long as I say this as a I'm a big Michigan fan. I am
you don't
terrified.
Want JJ.
I do not want JJ McCarthy on the
That's team. The proper feeling. You shouldn't want him. Yeah.
I do not want him. I really hope they don't overthink this. Like, Jaden Daniels is the clear-cut choice at number two.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.